Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy.
Baby, whisper to me. Make it hot, make it tense. I hear what you're saying. You don't make any sense. Darling, hours pass by at the foot of your bed.
Finding your true self is terrifying and liberating all at once. It can affect your mental health in positive ways through the validation of identity, but it can also present a whole new set of challenges, internal and external. Elijah Scarpatti is one half of self-proclaimed trans slut rock duo, Jennifer. Elijah says transitioning helped him understand the complications of his inner self. While it was tiring and daunting and a massive undertaking, he said he's proud of the work he's done to find his truth. And with a firmer sense of alignment with himself came a boost in Elijah's mental health. In simple terms, he says transitioning put him back on his own team.
My name is Elijah Scarpatti. I play in a band called Jennifer. We started about a year ago, me and my friend Fig, and we both co-front the band. It's two guitars, bass drums. We call it trans slut rock, and it's kind of like indie punk-tinged sort of pop sort of rock. We met at a mutual friend's birthday party about a year ago, and didn't exchange numbers or anything, didn't super stay in touch, but I kept bumping into her at different parties around the city and just liked her vibe and felt like we connected. And so then she wanted to start a band with someone, and I was like, I play music and I'm down. And we started writing together over text message, and we weren't expecting it to be as good as it was. We were kind of just messing around. And then the first song we wrote, I was like, this is really cool. And this is really fun, and we just kept going with it. We played duo for a long time, just two guitars and two vocals, and I made backing tracks for us. And then a couple months ago, we finally got a proper drummer and bassist and have been playing shows ever since. I got into music really, really young. My brother had a drum kit, a first act, little mini drum kit thing. And I started playing that probably when I was super, super young. I started playing hand drums at four or five or something. And then I got into drum kit maybe six or seven and started learning on that. And I just got obsessed with it. And my grandpa gave my brothers a few guitars. So I took those and I learned how to play guitar also. And then I started playing in a rock band when I was nine. And we just did rock covers. I got really into jazz and just listened to a ton of early jazz all throughout middle school and high school and played in a bunch of jazz bands. I did some classical percussion, and I've just been obsessed with music pretty much forever. And I mostly was a jazz drummer. I was planning on doing that. And then in college, I joined a band. It was a synth pop disco-y type band. And that brought me more into contemporary music and into songwriting and in modern music world, away from the old early jazz kind of vibe. I think of my journey with music as being very related to mental health, because they almost just feel kind of two sides of the same coin, where wherever one thing is, the other thing is kind of just, it's close by, they're just very related. And not always in one direction. Like sometimes if I'm not doing well, music is feeling really good. Sometimes if I'm not doing well, I can't do music at all. And sometimes it becomes kind of an indication is like when I can't really play or I don't feel like a drive to play music, I'm like, okay, something's going on. Also, sometimes when I'm really happy, I don't want to play music either. And I usually try to let that be because I'm like, this is something I got to just take and not really question. I got more conscious about mental health probably a couple years back. I went to a hypnotherapy session to kind of dig into some like repressed memories and just sort of, I knew that there were things that I wasn't acknowledging and I couldn't consciously process. And I did this like 5-hour long hypnotherapy session with a really, really wonderful hypnotherapist. And we just like dug into everything and I felt a much more conscious connection with myself and was able to acknowledge a lot of the things I was kind of suffering through. And I had never been in regular therapy until recently. And so I've never been diagnosed kind of mental health, anything, but I definitely feel a lot of like the symptoms when I read about this or that different things. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm sure I fall into that umbrella or something.
Yeah. Even the, what you said about the happy and the sad and how music kind of plays into those two things. I have that a lot too. I live with bipolar. And so when my moods are depressive, I just can't even bring up the will to even listen to music sometimes. And of course, when I'm manic, it's like, I have to do it all at once and I get super stoked and think that I'm the best guitar player in the world when I'm when I'm really not. I hear what you're saying about how the music and the mental health is just so aligned and especially writing songs too.
Yeah, definitely. One time I had a therapist and one of the things he said, he was like, some people would call me bipolar. I just think that I have an artistic disposition. And that was kind of his like view on the whole thing, which I really felt like a lot of my friends definitely have that high and low thing. And I just never really thought about it consciously until I went to like college and started playing in a band. And once my life wasn't really on like a schedule of school and I could just kind of read my own ups and downs naturally without something that I had to be on for, I started really seeing it where I was like, I can get all over the place and be such a different kind of person depending on this mood swing thing.
We have these labels that we have to put on each other to understand, to have a baseline. Okay, this is what bipolar means. Here's the checklist. Ultimately, the word is just a way to direct people or to, especially with other people that live with the same thing. But ultimately, it's symptoms based. And so it's good to know. It's amazing to know. For me, as I settle into this diagnosis after a few years, I start to realize that the word is just the word and it's more about how I'm feeling and what I'm learning and how I can help other folks and how they can help me. And
yeah, totally. I love that approach a lot. A couple years ago or something, I had someone very close to me was like, have you ever considered that you might have OCD? And I really never thought about it because I guess I had a very particular idea of what OCD was in my head. And they had been diagnosed and they were like, I feel like ways that were similar are the things that I relate to my OCD. And it's always interesting to me because something I think about a lot in terms of that is that when I was younger, I had a lot of very, very intense, very specific fears. And it was very related to like, I had to do things in a certain order. I had to walk a certain way, talk a certain way. I had a lot of like constant kind of mental games going on. And if I don't do them, it feels like something really specific and elaborate and horrible is going to happen. And a couple of years ago, I got into spirituality and meditation. And it became interesting balancing the idea of mental health with spirituality and intuition because there became this issue of, do I have OCD? Am I just having kind of an irrational fear that I need to work through? Or is this my intuition telling me something? I think I'm still in that process, but it took a lot of parsing through things and trying to learn just where that line is and where the line is maybe one in reality and two, what is going to functionally kind of help me through experiencing both and either of these things.
What does being diagnosed mean to you?
I don't know that it really means much. I think maybe if anything, it might just be kind of an easier social tool to explain something to somebody where sometimes it'll happen where someone will be like, I have XYZ and I don't feel like I can say the same things. I haven't been diagnosed and I don't feel comfortable self-diagnosing, I don't think. But I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about. I totally. So I think it would help me feel maybe a part of something. But I don't know, it's also tough because I do think of it as an approximation of something rather than a hard and fast category.
At first, I felt validated by it because it explained a lot of things in my life, and that was good. I'm still glad that I'm able to tell people, yes, I have been diagnosed with this, because a lot of the work that I do, it helps with support groups and stuff like that. But I tend to talk about, again, symptom stuff. Like if someone asks how I'm doing and I'm in a really bad episode, I won't say, look, I live with bipolar and this is what's happening. I usually just say, like, I have mood episodes or I have really intense moods. My system gets all riled up and I start to feel really high and low. And so it seems to make more sense to them than just to say, oh, bipolar, and they have their own idea of what that means, right? Whether it's appropriate or not, or accurate or not.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, I feel that similarly with mood stuff, and actually even with spirituality as well, which I also do relate to. It feels like music, spirituality, and mental health are very tied for me, and I think of that where a lot of the times I won't lead with the fact that I'm really into anything like that, just spirituality overall, or like into a concept of like God or something, because people have an idea of what that means in terms of religion. And to me, it's like such a different thing. I'm like, it's not about a social control thing, of course. It's not like this set of rules you have to follow, whatever. It's just a feeling that you have, or something that kind of everyone goes through, where sometimes you're feeling more connected and sometimes you're feeling disconnected. And it's just like another way to describe that experience.
When you're writing music, is there a lot of working through personal issues in the songs? Do you find that you're able to use it as a form of therapy, or is it more on the fun side?
Probably more so when I write something alone first. I'll start off alone and kind of like write everything out, and then Fig will add her parts. Not always. Sometimes we do. We kind of like, I'll bring something half finished, I'll write a verse, like we'll do that kind of thing. But I think typically I have to have like the inception of writing on my own, because it is a lot of processing through things. And sometimes it starts out very consciously like that, where I'll do a lot of things where I'll try to kind of write a song from someone I'm in love with who isn't in love with me back, or someone who I feel has, whatever it is, some kind of feeling of rejection or something like that, or a lack of connection. Also, platonically, too, like with friends that I've had falling outs with or something, like it's a way to kind of deal with that. And I'll write songs a lot of the times from their perspective. One, because I think it does help me understand them better and helps me kind of find peace with a situation if I can kind of get into their head, not only in an intellectual, empathetic sense, but in a playful conversational sense, where I can write a tongue-in-cheek song where they're kind of like, I did something stupid or whatever it was. And I think when I can get into that energy and feel what that feels like, and what I imagine they're feeling, or even what I fear that they think about me, if it's like total projection, I think it kind of helps me be able to say like, okay, that's all that is. That's the other end of that. Like, I don't know, it's kind of like I put myself into the place of what I'm afraid of, and then I see that it's not a big deal, and it's funny and it's charming, and it's just like something that everyone feels 100 times.
Yeah, the concept of check the facts with anxiety and looking at what the truth might be and writing through someone else's eyes is a really great idea, and I hadn't really thought of that. How did you come up with that idea? Was it just like a light bulb moment or?
I think the first time that I really thought of it, at least consciously, was I do a lot of songwriting when I'm walking around the city. And one of our songs called Delancey, the first thing that came to me was like, I thought I saw someone that I knew walking on Delancey. I think something about walking, it brings you in that rhythm. So the next lyric kind of came, the next lyric kind of came. It's kind of an avoidant character who's like, I don't really care what you have to say. I don't think you understand me. I know something that you don't, and you're so whatever. And the line that came to me, I think, was like, you talk too much and I hate your guts.
The love song.
Yeah, exactly. Like a love song. That line came to me, and I thought to myself, I don't usually feel that way about my romantic partners. I never feel like they talk too much and like they're annoying me. I always feel like they think that about me. And so I think that then I kind of followed that scent. And then it was interesting. It's always like this with like imagining someone else, and you end up projecting, of course. And so I thought about that, and then I was like, I don't feel that way about romantic people, but I certainly feel that way all the time. And I learned something about that character who initially I was like, that has nothing to do with me. And then I thought about it more, and more I sat with the song, I was like, yeah, I totally see myself in this kind of person. So yeah, it kind of came to me, and then I sort of made it intentional and really started digging into it. and kind of psychoanalyzing back and forth and seeing also just like what would be a very captivating character, what's a believable character, and one that I can relate to and also is kind of a villain.
It reminds me, you talked about walking down the street and that whole walking down the street and you see your friend up ahead on just cross the street and you think, oh, they hate me. And in fact, they just had seen something in a window and didn't see you, right? How the mind can play tricks like that. I wanted to ask you about something. I do a lot of crisis line responding, like volunteer stuff. And I know you folks are a big part of the queer community. And I just was really, maybe I shouldn't have been blown away, but I was very, very surprised at the amount of queer youth that used these lines. It was overwhelming. Maybe out of 10 calls, seven of them were trans youth, queer youth. From your perspective, because you are part of that community, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it makes total sense. It's interesting because I've definitely battled suicidal thoughts, I think my whole life, maybe since like middle school, I want to say. It didn't even seem really like an issue to me at first. It was just something that I kind of thought about and wanted and didn't know why. When I was younger, I never felt like I was in any kind of, it didn't feel dangerous to me. It was just something that I just felt like it was just kind of how I processed being upset was that I wanted to kill myself. And the idea really relaxed me. And then as I got older, then I've had some like different things as an adult where I was like, okay, this is more serious. And I had to really get ahead of it because it became too comfortable of a place that I went to. And I never related that to being trans or being queer, probably because I came out only when I was like 18, I came out as queer. And then when I was probably 20, I came out, I started kind of transitioning. And I didn't relate this consciously, but I guess like the more conscious I became about transitioning and just sort of like, it adds a whole layer of difficulty to your life, not because of itself necessarily, but just because of people's misunderstanding of you and people's bad faith kind of read of you as a person. And so I definitely do. I think I felt more of that because of that experience of being queer. And I think I'm kind of just in that process where I'm starting to understand that, where I always just thought like I've just been suicidal because who isn't? Like anyone in their right mind would be a little bit suicidal every so often. And I didn't really realize that it was more often than some other people I knew, and that it probably was related to this massive other burden that I kind of was carrying without knowing I was carrying it. And I think that that can go a long way where like, even like being younger, I was a girly girl because I felt like I really had to hide. I couldn't let anyone know what was going on, and I couldn't even let myself know really. I didn't really understand. I'm like, it makes sense that that's a huge mental weight to be able to effectively be able to lie to yourself and everyone around you, and it's a part of you doing it out of self-protection. So I think just like that dance, that internal thing that's going on, and like this sort of battle. It's just a lot of psychic weight, and it makes sense that people are like, I'm caring twice as much as this other person over here. Like this is, life is already hard, and now I've got this thing going on, and it's just like, it's overwhelming for sure.
Maybe a misconception is that folks that start to transition, that lifts all that weight off, because now, oh, they can be themselves now. And I think there's so much out there with the world. The weight isn't gone by any means. But from your perspective, how did you feel that change or that switch once you were able to come out?
That's an excellent point because that is such a misconception. And I want to rephrase the thing that I just said a second ago, which is that I guess it isn't so much even that you're carrying something that somebody else isn't carrying. Of course, it's a part of it, but the way that I felt that change for myself was that it's less that, trans people have this thing that other people don't have or whatever. I think transitioning for me, it wasn't an added thing, it wasn't a different thing. It was kind of just going more towards something that was very central, I think, to anyone. Transitioning just is a confrontation with a very, very deep part of yourself, and one that anyone, I think, has the capacity for. However you identify and however you feel, in this lifetime or anything, like, I think it is something that we all have. It's just a part of self. We all have multiple things in us and whatever, different energies. And I guess transitioning, it kind of relieved some of the pressure because I think just the way that honesty and clarity kind of always relieves some pressure and gives you this feeling of relief that you're in line with yourself, maybe. But also, I think the closer that you look into your own psyche, the more complications there are, just because we're like really complex creatures. And I think it's like, it's just like turmoil to exist. And transitioning is all about really, really looking at existence from like every single lens. It is a relief and it does feel good and it's euphoric. And also so many other things start popping up when you engage with that. I think at first, the first kind of moments of recognition and the first sort of year, it was kind of like this, oh my God, like I'm about to have to deal with a lot and to do a lot of internal work and to do a lot of work with other people and a lot of like explaining this very tender, vulnerable part of myself to people who weren't maybe just doing enough of the work that they should have been. So it was tiring at first and really difficult and just daunting. I was like, oh my God, it's just this massive undertaking. It happens in little things at a time, like just tiny, tiny decisions and tiny everyday things. And the more I did of those little things, the more I was like, okay, I have to do this work. I'm going to do it. And I did it. And it just was like, skyrocketed for my mental health. It's not that I don't experience the same dips and everything, but I think that getting through this whole thing and sort of just like the feat of transitioning, like I felt really proud about it. And I do feel really proud about it. And it's like, I'm like, okay, I can do this thing. And I've created this sort of life for myself and this existence for myself that I really love. And if I can do that, it's sort of like I got myself back on my own team. Like there was maybe a part of myself you have when you're younger that I really was like with, and that sort of part of myself kind of went away for a while. And I was like missing my partner in crime. And I think transitioning brought that back. And I was like, okay, I've got this, like myself as a team, like we're going to do it. And everything just felt more manageable and just easier to enjoy. I don't know, like tiny things became less of a slog and more just easy to enjoy the little things, I think.
I love that, the team. It reminds me of the, never really done much work on this, but the whole integrated family systems approach to therapy where you find all the different parts of yourself and bring them together. That's really cool. You mentioned before about having the irrational fears when you were a kid, and I'm wondering how you're doing with that these days.
I am doing a lot better generally. I used to have just a lot of like intense fears about anything, like a lot of stuff like with invasion, about like someone coming into my home or bugs or like contamination, that kind of thing. And it would kind of manifest of like, I just was like always looking over my shoulder and it was like really jumpy and whatever. And most of the time now it's not as intense. Like I'm able to kind of, I don't feel it on a day to day as much. Actually, I woke up today feeling it because I had a dream last night that just like spooked me to my core. And I woke up like just so whatever, but it's cool because I have such a better relationship with that now where I woke up, I was like, okay, I'm in this place. I'm having these fears. I'm jumping at every tiny sound and I can just see that right away now. And I'm like, okay, I'm spooked. Like I'm just having a spooky day and I'm anxious and I'm going to be like on high alert waiting for something to happen. I kind of now just like self-regulate. I'm like, I've got you. No one's coming here. I can protect you. Like, you know, we're all good. Reassuring that other part of myself is comforting. And I can come down a lot faster because in the past, it just was an instinct and it was an unfiltered instinct where I would hear a sound, I would be on high alert and I would be like just in fight or flight, ready to go. And I was thinking that I was protecting myself, that I was surviving. And so it was like, it felt like that was what I had to do because it just wasn't conscious. And now it's conscious and I'm like, okay, I hear my protective instinct. I don't need that right now. Like there's no intruder. There's no bear chasing me in the forest. I don't need to have my fight or flight activated. I can like come back down and be in my rational mind. And so, yeah.
What does the band mean to you, playing music with your friends?
It's just the greatest. It's really fun. It's the first time I've ever sang in front of people and played my own songs that I'm writing and like writing for myself and everything. So it's definitely the most expressive I've ever been with music. And it's just very creatively fulfilling and has been really empowering too, feeling like I'm helping create this thing from the ground up. And just getting to play with like musicians as wonderful as our bandmates, I think getting to create alongside these people who bring so much of their own heart into it is just really inspiring and really comforting. It's like nice feeling safe with my friends in a creative project.
And good for mental health as well.
Yeah, definitely.
That was my conversation with Elijah Scarpatti of Jennifer, umjennifer.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to ScreenTherapyHQ.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at ScreenTherapyHQ.com/store. And for even more designs, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at ScreenTherapyHQ.com or email me at ScreenTherapyPodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.